Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams today. You can find me online, thinkglink.com or bestmoneymoves.com or any of the social media sites. So as we said a little bit earlier, Wall Street is having a tough time understanding what to do with today's unemployment numbers. They were less than optimal, shall we say. Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Management Director with Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest, joins us to unpack it all. Hey, Stephen, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So this was a really interesting report from, totally not what economists were expecting. They thought that we would be making 500,000 jobs and we'd see the unemployment rate decline to 5.1%. And instead, we're less than half of that and the unemployment rate declined to 4.8%. What's your take on it?
It's never ceased to amaze me. You're in a situation in which the numbers are always revised. We know that. Just last month was revised upward by 100,000 jobs. And, you know, they're rarely ever right as to where the numbers are going to come. So I would look at the bigger picture, that the demand for labor is growing dramatically. We are in a situation in which we all know that there's help wanted signs everywhere, but you're still in that cross current between getting back to normal with COVID, as well as companies, and each state has a different rule regarding returning to work, et cetera. So all those factors are causing the numbers to be choppy, but I really wouldn't focus on those at all. I think the numbers are going to continue to get better. You want to look out 6 to 9 months as to where you think we're going to be and invest your money accordingly. And I think the future is very bullish, and depending on what sectors you're in the market and where you're looking, rates will go up. But I think overall, I'm quite bullish.
All right. So let's look a little bit at sort of a deeper dive into where the jobs are actually being created, because there was a surprise that in the government sector, which includes state and federal, it was down 123,000 jobs. And one of the stories that I read this morning, I've been trying to figure out why the heck that was going on, is that school districts literally couldn't hire enough bus drivers, food workers, people other than teachers to actually teach, that they're having trouble. And that's one of the big reasons that sector just isn't doing well. Whereas in hospitality, 74,000 jobs created, which everybody thought should have been a lot higher. Aren't people eating out?
I think people are, depending on what state you're in and where you're at, it varies. So yeah, there's going to be some inconsistencies in what's going on in the economy. So again, I wouldn't really pay too much attention to the broad number. Rather look around what's really happening and try to forecast going forward as opposed to the numbers we had today. I just don't think they're all that accurate. I really don't.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, if you look back.
All right.
You talk because I asked you a question. You finish first.
All right. I think the economy is going to grow much faster than most think. I think as the world opens up, we're seeing it overseas. Your travel's increasing. I was last weekend in Telluride and with a friend of mine, and told me that he's never seen the airport that busy in 26 years. And the Hertz Rent-A-Car agency said they are sold out for 6 more weeks straight, not a car. So those kind of factors, when you're just on the ground, boots on the ground, give you an indication that things are going to get better. And even in the car industry, you can't find cars. So when the cars come back online and the supply chains come back into line, and they will, you're going to see an explosion on the other side, and I think a lot of surprises to the upside in 2022. So that's where I would look as an investor.
All right. So what I was going to say, what you've kind of covered a little bit of that, is this idea that where you are in the country in this past year is really having an impact, in the past month, is really having an impact on where things are today. So a month ago, we were in this real Delta surge where I was down in Florida and literally afraid to go into a restaurant because Florida was so hot. Well, Florida's really calmed down and things have really dramatically changed month over month. So to your point, it feels like maybe these numbers are more temporary. And then that would mean maybe next month we're just going to see this pre-Christmas big explosion, except for the fact that we do have the supply chain issue, and that's going to be with us for at least another 6 months. Stephen Esposito, Executive Director, Wealth Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Management Director with Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest, is on the phone with us right now. So, Stephen, Tesla announced today that it, or maybe yesterday, that it's officially moving its headquarters from California to Texas. What do investors need to think about with regard to that move?
I don't think it makes much of a difference for the company in general. I just think they're doing it for tax reasons, like many other companies. They're simply moving where the tax rates are lower and more efficient. That's my understanding of what's happening there. It doesn't really mean much for investors right now, though.
Do you feel like, just to carry on with tax rates for a moment, that the global minimum business tax that they're working on, I think Ireland just finally acquiesced and said it would raise its minimum rate from maybe 12.5% to the 15% that President Biden is looking for. Do you feel like that's going to have an impact on U.S. businesses? Should investors think about that?
Absolutely. Going forward, it depends on where the rates are. You want to be competitive. You want to encourage people to invest and take risk. And if the tax rates simply climb too high, then the problem is there's less risk, less hiring, more cost controls, et cetera. So, yeah, it does. It will have an impact. The question is to what degree and where you're at. So you don't want that too much of the change going forward to be too much of an increase, but maybe something more in moderation. And so we don't know. That's a wild card in the market right now. We don't know what's going to happen with the pending tax legislation that's out there. Could have a dramatic impact, could have no impact. We just don't know yet. So that's, I think, kind of a cloud overhanging the market right now.
It's kind of interesting because the idea that no matter where you go in the world, you'd have the same minimum tax rate of 15%. It's kind of an interesting way to approach it. And a lot of companies feel like they would benefit by signing on. So I was kind of interested to see that Ireland, which has had such a boom since it really lowered its tax rate, they finally came along board for this. So here's another thing that I have to say kind of surprised me is that the majority of company leadership now support vaccine mandates. And, United made big news this week by saying that it managed to get all but 300 people out of 65,000 to actually get their vaccines. Now, everybody may not be happy about it, but they're vaccinated. And I know companies were a little hesitant about this. What's your sense of the market reaction to that?
I think the market likes to see less risk with the Delta variant in general. So if that ends up coming from that direction, whether it be from employers or the government, what have you, they may not be, I know the market's relating to confidence that we're going to get beyond this. Whether that's the reason or how they're viewing it going forward, we'll see. It's all about confidence in getting past the Delta variant. Once we're past this, assuming we are, and I think we're going to be hopeful, that then the confidence will return, more risk will return, investors will return, more stores will open, more businesses will open. And again, the world is very different right now as to where they're at in the cycle. And that's what I think investors have to look at. So what I look at it is, where are we going to be 6, 9, 12 months, 2 years from now as an investor, and look for opportunities to take advantage of the mispricings in the market. So as more people become vaccinated, as the confidence returns, and more importantly, the number of new cases and deaths drops as we're seeing right now, that level of confidence will get us back to normal. And the sooner we get back to normal in the world, the better. And that should bode well for economies all over the world.
It's interesting from an HR point of view because, with my company, Best Money Moves, which is all about financial wellness in a corporate environment, we sell business to business. Some of our partners in the health space have really had to take on just an enormous amount of new business. Not that they mind, right? Their numbers are going up in terms of sales, but one of our partners is a health wellness platform, and they had to literally invent almost overnight a vaccine, a mandated vaccine compliance tool that basically measures, which in these huge companies, who's actually gotten their vaccine and they've had to maintain that. And one of our partners said that they had done 179 demos in less than 3 weeks with companies that are looking to be able to prove, I guess, to their insurance companies that this is something that they've actually done. And it made me think that there's really just new areas of opportunity. We saw in the Forbes list that we had seven new billionaires just relating to COVID from Moderna. There was a couple from them and, Pfizer and what have you, and some of these other people who have invented things. Is this an area that you would consider investing in, the whole vaccine? I don't even know what to call it. The production of vaccines.
I'm always looking for opportunities as a something I've been doing for nearly four decades, looking for opportunities. But a lot of that is new. We don't really know how long that's going to last. Is it a temporary phenomenon? Many businesses had a big spike in their businesses that related to what you're talking about. And then many of those company stocks ran up too far, too fast, and now we're coming down hard. So you've got to look at the sustainability of that and if that will where that'll be in 2 years from now. So you may be able to get a big spike in your business today, which will, you know, exaggerate your numbers. But the question is, going forward, it'll be a lot of demand for that once this all calms down. Will businesses start pulling back from that type of an investment? So I'd have to look at the numbers on the companies and the sustainability of what they're doing and the demand. But that's an unknown. And when you're investing unknowns, you got to be very careful as to you don't overpay for what's going on. And that's a concern I would have.
All right. And so let's just finish up with the real future, space and climate, right? So climate change is coming. It's here now. Investing in climate change companies has been a mixed bag, I think, in the past. But going forward, you know that climate change is coming. So how do you evaluate? And same thing with space exploration. I mean, we're seeing, you know, William Shatner go up. He's supposed to go up this weekend. How do you evaluate the future?
That's very difficult. You don't know because of the uncertainties there. And once again, it's all about being able to predict where the numbers are going to be. And that's really difficult. When I put portfolios together for clients, that to me is a much riskier investment option that I had a tendency to stay away from, because many of those companies in the world on the space side of it, depending on what function they're playing, it's just there's no numbers there. There's no earnings. I can't gauge the profitability or what I'm paying for any earnings at all. There's different companies you can look at in different areas, climate change related, what will be affected positive and negative. That's, again, it's more difficult because many of those companies, the market's become a period now where the minute some news hits the tape, investors flock towards those hot sectors. We're really not looking at the investments they're making. They're just buying the names or the hot stock. I think it's very dangerous. I don't do that. I've learned, again, in four decades not to play that game. Rather look for the areas that nobody likes. Try to find bargains within those sectors and see where you can benefit. So that's been a hot sector. And as you said yourself, it's been very inconsistent, winners and losers. So that's not for the faint of heart, I don't believe. I think that's for somebody who wants to be speculating more and trying to guess where the next major move's going to make. And that's just not something I do.
Stephen Esposito is Executive Director and a Senior Portfolio Management Director with Morgan Stanley in Lake Forest. Thanks for being with us again. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
We now want to turn to what's going on with bathrooms. This is, if you watch, HGTV as I do, you're probably fascinated by the turning over of homes in 30 minutes. Boy, if it were only that easy. And I was watching yesterday, and in one of the Flipper whatever shows, they redid a bathroom, and the host made a really bad choice in the design. And of course, it knocked, I don't know, $50,000 off the resale price. And that seemed kind of crazy to me. So what we wanted to do was check with the experts at Houzz. And so we have with us today Marina Sargsyan, I hope I said that right, joining us. She's a senior economist specializing in survey data, and Houzz is, of course, Houzz, the leading platform for home remodeling and design. Marina, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Elise. Thank you so much for having me.
So Houzz just did its 2021 Bathroom Trends Report, and I know that there's all kinds of research up at Houzz.com/research. And, you know, the whole idea behind bathroom designs, I mean, if I pass a new house today and it's not white with a black roof, I know that there's something wrong. And I think that, you know, we're running out of black paint in this country. I know I did that story not too long ago. What were some of the key trends that you were able to spot in the survey data when it comes to people and their new bathrooms?
Absolutely. One of the main takeaways from this study is that homeowners are looking for their bathrooms for a place to rest and relax. They crave a place for serenity in their bathrooms, away from the chaos of the pandemic. In particular, we have seen an uptick in premium features, hygienic surfaces, and plants and other greenery to create this spa-like atmosphere.
All right, so everybody just wants to hide away in their bathrooms. Is that what you're telling me?
That's exactly what I have been doing with my toddler in the recent year.
All right. COVID has driven everybody in the house. And then the only place you ever get privacy is the one room with a lock on the door, the bathroom. I got it. So spa feel, we want plants that we now have to take care of in our bathrooms. But what about color? Well, you know, what are we seeing in terms of color? Is it matching the kitchen where everything is gray, white, and black?
That's a great question. We know that white dominates the color palette in our homes, whether it's kitchen or bathrooms. But what we are seeing is that blue and wood vanities have become more popular over the past year, bringing warmth and texture to the bathroom. The share of homeowners opting for blue vanities has doubled compared to last year. And we are also seeing medium and light wood tones that are becoming more common this year as well.
So when you say blue vanities, do you mean that the top is blue marble, for example, or are you saying that the bottom wood part is painted blue?
The actual painted, the wood part of the cabinet vanity is painted in blue. For the marble, though, we do see that countertops and marble is being used for flooring, for walls in a bathroom, but white dominates there as well.
So, you know, what's sort of interesting to me is that, you know, the whole idea of having marble, which is a pretty porous surface in a bathroom where you can have all kinds of liquids and potions and gels spilled on it and marking it and discuss, I mean, does it really wear well? I just wonder if people are renovating their bathrooms just for that, you know, Instagram picture moment and then, you know, it all falls to pieces.
That's an interesting insight. And yes, marble is taking the spotlight, but we have historically that ceramic tiles were consistently the winner of shower materials, for example, right? But marble is being adopted at a higher rate by renovating homeowners this year. And we are seeing that it's being used for flooring as well as for walls.
Yeah.
As far as for the usability of it, it's interesting to see the choices that homeowners are making, and these are the revealed preferences that we are seeing in our report.
Yeah, I'll bet. And so another trend that I think you've found in this the study that I read is that toilet technology has evolved, and people are looking to really upgrade the toilet tech. Tell me what that is. What does that mean?
Yes, so we have more than a third of homeowners that upgraded their toilets during these renovations to incorporate some of the technology, right? And part of it is bidets remain the most popular tech feature, and also followed by self-cleaning and heated seats. Overflow protection, as well as built-in nightlights, are also part of the high tech that is being incorporated into bathrooms.
I love that idea, having a nightlight so you're not tripping over things in your bathroom. That sounds actually like a really smart idea. And you also found that light is just, there's never enough light in a bathroom, something that I can attest to. And so lighted mirrors, different kinds of lighting and mood lighting. Is that all the stuff that we're going to start seeing in bathrooms or are seeing already?
We are already seeing those being incorporated into bathrooms. Homeowners cite that insufficient lighting and lack of natural lighting is an issue before they start a bathroom renovation, which explains why more than 4 in 5 homeowners upgraded their lighting fixtures this year. We see wall lights and recessed lights remain the top two choices in upgraded lighting. However, lighted mirrors, as you mentioned, pendant lights, and even chandeliers all inched up in popularity from last year. And this adds to that wow factor that our homeowners are looking for.
Wow. Well, people are definitely spending a lot for these renovations, and we'll have to check in with you to see how it all plays out when it comes to the kitchen remodel report, and I know that's coming up soon. Marina Sargsyan is the senior economist specializing in survey and data science at Houzz. They're a leading platform for home remodeling and design. You can find out more at Houzz, HOUZZ.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, and it's time now for Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Freight and logistics tech firm LoadSmart has leased a new headquarters in Chicago's Loop. Cranes reports the company has secured 35,000 square feet at 175 West Jackson. It's moving its headquarters from New York to Chicago. The new space is more than triple the amount LoadSmart had been leasing at 150 North Michigan. The company also plans to double its headcount in this space to 200 by the end of the year. LoadSmart software enables shippers, carriers, and brokers to efficiently manage automated supply chains. Foxtrot has announced plans to open a store in the Gold Coast, and the location is expected to be the company's largest so far. The location is the company's 10th in Chicago and 14th nationwide. The new store is set to open tomorrow at 23 West Maple. Foxtrot announced plans earlier this year to open 50 new stores over the next 2 years. The company launched online in 2014, delivering beer, wine, and other items. Its first brick-and-mortar shop opened in 2016. Foxtrot has stores in several Chicago neighborhoods, including Wicker Park, Lincoln Park, Old Town, River North, and West Loop. I'm Steve Quartanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Well, this ought to be a paid holiday here in Chicago. It's National Pierogi Day, and if you can't find a pierogi today or any day, you just aren't trying. In a minute, I will tell you about the reason women often put an apple slice in their armpits. But first, it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and Jim has some thoughts about whether you should try to grow your own apples.
Well, you know, you need to think about it very long and hard before you start growing your own apples, but planting is always in the spring. The thing you need to remember is that this is a multi-year commitment, and it's not easy to grow these things. Don't do it if you're not sure of it, because you can always go out and buy them. First of all, you have to allow plenty of room for the size of tree that you're growing. Most of us grow full dwarfs, which spread about 4 feet at most and get not quite as tall as most of the others, so you can pick them mostly without a picking ladder. Also, keep in mind that there are some varieties that require a pollinator, so you have to have two varieties. And they're messy as well. They have to be picked when they're ready to pick, which means that you have to make time to do that, and you don't pick them all at once because they don't ripen all at once. But if you let them fall, they attract yellow jackets and make a mess on the ground. So, you know, it takes a lot of thought as to whether you really want to go through all this. If you do, make your plans and be ready to go by spring.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. Now, about those armpit apples, I was reading in advance of a book that's coming out this month. Gastro Obscura, A Food Adventurer's Guide is the title. It contains odd facts about food through the centuries. In 19th century Austria, at singles dances, women would dance with men on the hunt, all the while keeping an apple slice tucked into their armpit. When the music stopped, the women would remove the pheromone-soaked apple and offer it to the man of their choice. To return the compliment, the man had to eat the apple, which meant he enjoyed the woman's personal fragrance. There you go, armpit apples. From the farm to your belly, in addition to Pierogi Day, it is Hero Day, and it is National Fluffernutter Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Kelly Levine is VP of Consumer Insights for Alliance Life, and they just did a survey wondering how people are feeling about a future market crash. And given the up and down of the market today and what's going on, it's not surprising that people are worried. Kelly, welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, thanks, Elise. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So what did your survey find? Because I think it sounded to me when I was looking over the survey results that people seem quite worried now.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's going to be a surprise considering what's been going on over the last few months in the market. But it really does show, even since when we first did this in January, significant increase in worry for most of the pre-retirees, especially about where the market is, what the chances for inflation are going to be.
And a big market crash also, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the one of the biggest, the biggest fears out there right now. It's not just the inflation. And it makes sense. You're paying more for gas. You're paying more for those immediate things. Nothing's really on sale because everything is in short supply still. So the prices are going up. So we're feeling that immediately. But the crash is the volatility that's gone on lately. Certainly we're in historic times. So nobody knows when the next correction is going to be. But
so yeah, your survey
the crash is looming in people's minds.
Yeah, so your survey found that 54% are worried about another big market crash. That's up from 45% in Q2. 69% are worried that the increase in COVID infections, which are now declining, will cause another recession. And almost 80% of Americans expect inflation to get worse over the next year. Those numbers are, you know, it's interesting how some things turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You know, if we're worried about inflation, if we expect it, sometimes we think that we're finding those higher prices, even if we're not. And yet things go up, like gas prices are up higher, and we're seeing, you know, Christmas, you know, in question here. What else did your survey, you know, find about purchasing power?
Yeah, well, don't say it's in question. Christmas is still going to happen.
Oh, there's definitely going to be Christmas. There's Christmas, but you might have to buy stuff now, right? So
yesterday,
we did a story about how Amazon is having its, you know, another Black Friday early, and Costco has already got its Christmas stuff out and they're selling it. So it's not a question that we're not going to have it. We're just a question of how much people think they're going to have to pay for it. Would that be a better way to put it?
Thank you. I just was about to finish my letter to Santa Claus, so I was really worried when you just said that. But in reality, yes. It's going to be certainly a different Christmas. We didn't get the big 4th of July, yes, everybody's free, we're all going to be back to normal type of events. So we're seeing that in a reflection in the market, and you're right about the self-fulfilling prophecy. Oftentimes, because of what consumers fear, they bring about the things they fear the most through their actions, whether it's not buying as much, whether it's hoarding things again, whether all the different factors that could go into being able to not have a good insight on what could possibly be in the near future. And the one main point, if anybody is going to listen to anything that I say, which would be a first, is you want to make sure you don't panic. Don't do things you're going to regret. If you are working with a financial advisor, especially, and you've got a path set right now, and you've got some investments in line, and the closer you're going to retirement, likely they've changed some of those investments to be a little bit less aggressive. Possibly the worst thing you can do right now is pull everything out and go to cash because you're afraid everything's going to go down, because historically you're going to miss that, and nobody usually wins on market timing. There's always a one or two, but the majority of people lose on market timing. So if you get some protection for these volatile times and for inflation, you're going to be able to make it through and you'll be just fine.
So one
of
the things,
biggest message.
Yeah, so one of the things your study found, and we're just short of time now, is that people are increasingly likely to say it's important to have some protection or protection products that will keep their income steady in retirement, even if there's market loss. And I think that that's a real insight and a smart way for people, as they're something I talk about on my Sunday show, This Week in Wealth, every week, that you want some sort of guaranteed income so that you can smooth out the ups and downs of the market. Kelly Levine is Vice President of Consumer Insights at Alliance Life. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, we're at Alliance. We're really here to just make sure that we help everybody out, not just our contract holders, with information they can use. So hopefully this was helpful.
Absolutely. Thanks, and we'll have you back for sure.